May I have your attention? This morning we're going to be looking at the next session in our generosity study. It will be on generosity with possessions. Generosity with possessions. So we'll pray and then we'll watch the video and we'll get into the lesson. Father, thank you for this morning. Even though it's gray and cold and wet, Lord, you give us all good things. And Lord, you know exactly what we need. And so, Father, I pray that this morning you would meet us with our greatest need, our need for your Son and for the word that he has for us. It's in your Son's name we pray. Amen. Start the video. Okay, so generosity with possessions. This one, when I was thinking of a generosity study, wouldn't have maybe risen to the surface in my mind of what generosity looks like. But he really gave us a compelling message here about what generosity with possessions looks like. And to be honest, I think it's maybe one of the most uncomfortable ones that I've looked at. And I think it might be, and maybe you guys can help me out with this. Being an American, our possessions are pretty dear to us, and not even in a very conscious way, I think. It's really ingrained into our culture that we are what we own, as he said. Does anyone else have that feeling? Does anyone else feel just a little uncomfortable thinking about whatever, if you were to zero in on one thing in your house that is really valuable to you, would you consider just giving it away? Is there one thing that you might have that just that would be really difficult? Anyone have something like that? Am I the only one? Yeah. Okay. We've got one more. Thank you. This is a difficult one, and I think the most compelling quote that he gave: "If you own something you cannot give away, then you don't own it; it owns you." Whatever that item is in your house, or we'll look at things above and beyond items, actual physical possessions, or keepsakes, I should say. We'll look beyond that. But if you think of that one thing and you imagine yourself giving it away, do you feel some anxiety kind of well up inside you, even imagining giving that thing away? And I think that makes this quote come alive. When I imagine the most treasured thing I own going into someone else's hands, well, there's this feeling I get in my gut. And I think that's illustrated perfectly in this quote. If you own something you cannot give away, then you don't own it, it owns you. I had two baseballs that I got when I went on a trip with my dad, probably 5 years before he died, to Minnesota. He grew up in Minnesota and I'd never been with him. I made it a point in college to go with him to Minnesota for the first and last time to a Minnesota Twins game. We love watching the Twins play. And I got two baseballs while I was there at the Minnesota Twins game. And I brought it with me. This is about 2020, about a year before he died, actually. And I brought it with me to my armory where I was going back and forth to Fayetteville for a year. And one of my co-workers brought their dog in that day. Really big dog. It was a lot of fun to play with the dog, but I think you see where this is going. He was huge, and he tore that baseball up. And, of course, the other person who I had built a relationship with and was really seeking to spiritually guide and help in their life, they were going through some difficulties in their marriage and some other things. And of course, they saw my face fall and how I felt about that. And it took me a moment, for sure. But I think the Spirit worked in me to say, it really is okay. It was important to me. I want you to know it was important to me, this ball that he got a hold of. But You and your dog is way more important than this ball. So it's hard. It really is. And I lived that only one time with a small possession. So this is a difficult one. So let's look at Luke 12, 13 to 21, and see what Jesus teaches us about possessions. Someone in the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." But he said to him, "Man, who made me a judge or arbiter over you?" And he said to them, "Take care and be on your guard against all covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions." And he told them a parable, saying, "The land of a rich man produced plentifully. And he thought to himself, 'What shall I do? For I have nowhere to store my crops.' And he said, 'I will do this. I will tear down my barns and build larger ones. And there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I will say to my soul, Soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, and be merry.' But God said to him, 'Fool, this night your soul is required of you. And the things you have prepared, whose will they be?' So is the one who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God." As I look at this this study of generosity with possessions, I really think this is, like all the generosities, a matter of our faith. Who is the object of our trust? The scriptures that we'll look at this morning are all pointing us to one thing, and that is that Jesus is the greatest possible possession we could ever have. He himself. And as he talked about in the video, if you've done it to one of the least of these, you've done it unto me. And so how do we get beyond this ownership that things have over us? It's the love of Christ for us and our love in return for him, which then turns into love for others. It's a relationship. It's about the relationship. Why was Mary able to pour out the most costly possession she had? Good Sunday school question. She loved Jesus. Yeah. She loved him so much that it was not a question. Was it hard, I wonder? Maybe. I think so. But what eased the difficulty? So we see her love for Jesus. What made her passionate in her love for Jesus? What thing happened that he mentioned in the video? Yeah, yeah. So you see how the relationship thing keeps coming back over and over again. How can we let go of our possessions, our most valued possessions? He didn't really leave a gap for us, right? I donate to Goodwill. He didn't leave a gap for us in the video for that, right? Those are the things that are easy to give away, usually. You know, it's something I no longer want or have a use of, and I give that away. Nothing wrong with that. But it's not the generosity that the scriptures are calling us to. And here, the mindset that I think needs to be fixed in our culture is understanding the contentment point. The man in the parable, he sees that he has enough grain, just a big storehouse full of grain. And then he has a little conversation with himself. And he says, "What shall I do? For I have nowhere to store my crops." But he has plenty. He has plenty. We have to recognize at a certain point, when is it enough? Do I need the best car, the biggest house, all the signs of wealth like he was talking about in the video? How important and valuable are those things to me? And, I mean, how true of it? If it's not true of you, it's at least true of someone that you work with. Or someone in your family who they are climbing a ladder in search of and seeking possessions endlessly and without thought. they just know that they should keep climbing, keep going, keep adding, keep growing. Make my storehouse bigger and bigger and bigger. And they don't pause. And at least this man paused and said, Well, what shall I do? We are in a culture that doesn't even pause to think about, what do we do? What do I do now that I'm here? Evaluating your life. I am here now. And look at where I've come from. We love a rags to riches story in America. I mean, so many of us have started at poverty and grown from all the hard work we've done. And that's part of, I think, what gets in our psyche about, I just have to keep climbing and keep climbing and keep going. But at least he pauses. And when he pauses, what does he do? He's not content. So he moves beyond the contentment point and he builds more barns. And we do the same thing. We go beyond the point of which we should be content. We should evaluate. We should think about these things. Jesus' parable that follows about the birds of the air and the lilies of the field is a call to us to think about, what do you actually need? What is it that would be enough? And he says, even those basic things, God readily provides for us. Go ahead, Brian. Yeah, it sure does, doesn't it? It's we need this challenge from Jesus to evaluate. I mean, in both of these things, he's asking us to consider, right? The rich man here has his barn full and he considers. He thinks about it. He looks at himself and his possessions. And then in the parable that follows, he's asking you, consider the lilies of the field. Consider the birds of the air. And what we do is, rather than consider, I think what you're saying is, we're just, as we move along in life, the contentment point naturally shifts. The more I get, it's just naturally shifting. Without any thought, it just goes further and further. It doesn't even occur to us. Is this enough? Should I stop here? when do I stop? Why should I stop? So what's going on in our soul? I mean, this is a really different parable for Jesus. In verse 19, when he says, "And I will say to my soul, soul, you have ample goods laid up for you for many years. Relax, eat, drink, and be merry." Very rarely do we get in any parable just a very window into someone's heart and what goes on. But he knows exactly how we talk to ourselves, right? That's what Jesus is doing. He knows our self-reflection. And in this parable, a rare first-person point of view, talking to yourself. And what he says is, you have ample goods laid up for many years. This is what we do. This is what we're seeking in contentment. Eventually, we get to a point where, finally, I never have to worry about when I swipe my card. I never have to worry about fill in the blank. And I get to finally just enjoy all the pleasures of life, sitting on my little throne. This is what's going on with our possessions. I'm finally sitting on the throne of my life, right? This is what's going on in our hearts. This is what's going on in our soul. Is we get to say to our soul, I am finally king of my own little kingdom, queen of my own little, yes. Hmm. Maybe you put off, even to that point, certain travel or something like that, and you're chasing it your whole life. And how many around that age have this wake-up call that's in the parable? You fool, tonight your soul is required of you. And you haven't attended to really the greatest need of your soul. And in the next parable, we've alluded to it a few times already. Do you wonder about, in this culture, the anxiety problem that we have? The high reports of depression and anxiety and the medications that go with it, right? And all the things that go with this culture of anxiety. And what Jesus calls us to in this next parable is to ask the question, is there enough? Will there ever be enough? If your possessions own you, you will be anxious, is what he's saying. If your possessions are owning you, you will be anxious. He's talking about things that we eat or drink, the most basic, one of our most basic needs, and our clothes, one of our most basic needs, food and shelter, right? And we get anxious. These things, even the most basic level needs, can take over our lives and begin to control ourselves, become our masters. And he's asking us, is there enough? Is there enough? Will you ever be content? And he's saying, there is a point where we can look at our lives and say, this is enough. And more importantly, to seek the things that are above. Verse 29 and 30. Do not seek what you are to eat and what you are to drink, nor be worried. For all the nations of the world seek after these things, and your Father knows that you need them. Instead, seek his kingdom, and these things will be added to you. Fear not, little flock, for it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom, to give it to you. Sell your possessions and give to the needy. Provide yourselves with money bags that do not grow old, with a treasure in the heavens that does not fail, where no thief approaches and no moth destroys. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. This is a call to believe in Jesus and to believe his words. What he's saying about the future. I think this is one of the most difficult things for us to do, to trust really, genuinely, in our culture, to trust that if I sold everything I had, that I have a treasure in heaven, that it is real, that it is sure, that it is fixed because of what Jesus has done for me. That's a hard thing to believe because we know this life and we have to wake up every morning and go to work and earn a paycheck and provide for our most basic needs. And so we get distracted we just get into a routine of life where we forget about there is something after this. And if we start thinking that way, I think our mindset about our possessions might change. Then I might be able to give up something that's dear to me. I'm going to make this a little more practical and relevant. Those of you who have the gift of hospitality, I think, know what it means to be generous with your possessions. So if you have this gift, you're off the hook for these next few minutes as we think about this. But have you ever invited people over to your house? Yes? Yeah? You've done that? Yeah. And what do you do when you invite little kids over to your house, for example? You have some valuable things laying around. I hear some murmuring. You childproof it? Yeah. Yeah. What if a kid saw that really shiny thing up there? Hey, can I hold that? What would you do? Oh, in wisdom, you wouldn't give it to them. That's crazy, right? They might hurt themselves. Oh, they might hurt themselves, yeah. Not on the object, right? Who said that? No. They might hurt themselves if they were to get a hold of that, right? One of our most valued possessions is our homes, right? We want to keep it nice, and we want to make sure that things are just so, and it's our place of refuge and peace, isn't it? But when we think of generosity with our possessions, most of our greatest possessions are probably our house. And how many of us are willing to let people come into that, to be a part of that, to take, essentially, from that peace, that place that's yours, that thing that's yours. Go ahead. Yeah. Yeah. I think I see where you're going with that, Russ. It's, it becomes a part of who we are, right? Yes. It becomes a part of who we are, these things that we have, and becomes inseparable from what's going on in our soul. Go ahead. Thank you for your vulnerability there, Kelly. I mean, I think that's what goes on for most of us, right? When we think about our most treasured possession, our home, and it becomes a part of who I am. And it's very, I mean, your home is very intimately involved with who you are. It's where you do life, right? And with the people closest to you. And as you said, I mean, we come from various degrees of, I've had to, nothing's ever been mine, right? Big family, nothing's ever been mine. And so maybe you have a little less work to do on that, but there is some work to do. Something C.S. Lewis says that being close to God is more about the journey than your actual closeness, distance to him. And what I mean by that, what he meant by that was, you might have a personality where or upbringing where you've always had all your possessions free use for all your siblings, right? And you're just kind of used to things not being yours. But there is that one thing. Just because you're close in that way already by default, you haven't grown. You haven't moved any closer to God in your journey, in your pursuit of him, as far as your ability to give up your most valued possession. You're just close because of circumstances and upbringing and culture, right? And then it's harder for some people. But the person who it's harder for Kelly, she had to walk closer to God to be able to become generous with her possessions. So I want all of us to recognize that as we look at all these generosities, right? Some of these things may come easier to some of us than others. But it's important with any virtue to realize that some things you might have and because God has simply gifted them to you. It's a gift that you grew up in a big family with where nothing was yours because you don't have this tie to your possessions, right? It's a gift of God. It is not really a part of how you've pursued him. And recognizing that, especially for someone else, it's hard. We judge people, don't we? When we see someone who is not like us, that just something that comes naturally to us. Why are you so worried about your house, Kelly? You know, why are you so worried about that thing? It came natural to you and you start judging and write someone off. But really, we all have a difficulty with one of these generosities, right? And we need each other to grow in these. I'm not really on top like what I was going to study, but this is important for us as we think about all these generosities. How can you come alongside someone who did grow up with lots of possessions, and they're important to them, or someone who did not? How can you come alongside this person and walk with them in a Godward direction? I'm going to skip this part. But the man who owned many possessions, you know the story, the rich man who went away sorrowful. Jesus challenges him, "Do you know who I am?" When he asks, there's only one person who is good, and that's God alone. He was seeking to see what this man knew about Jesus, what he thought about Jesus. Are you saying that you think I'm the Son of God? He was challenging him. And the man didn't answer really that question, who do you say that I am? Or what do you mean by good? He doesn't really answer that question. But then he calls him to trust him. Go and sell all of your possessions. If you believe that I am the one, the Messiah, and worthy of following, then go and sell all of your possessions. And he went away sorrowful because he had many possessions. He didn't believe what Jesus said, which was, you will have a reward and abundance in heaven. And that's really what this boils down to. Do you know Jesus and will you trust him? But really there is only one owner. The cure for us who are on this rat race and holding on and clinging tightly to our possessions is to recognize that there is truly only one owner. We want to be the owner. We want to have our little kingdom, as we saw with the parable of the rich fool who built more barns. And so we look at Colossians 1:15. He is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation. For by him all things were created, in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities. All things were created through him and for him. And he is before all things, and in him all things hold together. So, how many times do we see the word all things? All things. He is before all things. This is true of reality. All things are his, and he created all things. There's not a gap in this whole creation. A corner in all of creation that we own. Not one thing. And so, the cure to this problem, if you own something you cannot give away, then you do not own it. It owns you. The cure to that is to recognize, I don't even own it. It's not even mine. It's his. Do we believe this? Do we believe this? It's his. It's always been his. My very life, my next breath, it's all his. I mean, not a gap to be found where this could, where we could say, this is a corner that Jesus does not own, that is not his, that was not created by him, that was not created for him, that is not for him. And so, there's only one owner. Go ahead. Yeah, absolutely. And he will. This is the birds and the flowers, right? He knows you need all these things. And he created them for us to enjoy as a gift. Let's go back to the beginning of creation. We're the ones who said, I'll have it for myself. I'll have it for myself. When he was just giving it away. When it was all things pleasant, all things beautiful. We're all just available to them. And so what we do, what goes on in our hearts is, we say, this will be mine. I will have say over this. But all things are his. And this is what he's saying here in verse 21. We rebel against this good God. You who were once alienated and hostile in mind, doing evil deeds, he has now reconciled in his body of the flesh by his death. People who have a strong sense of ownership of things are in rebellion against God. But he has done the work of reconciliation. Do we realize the truth at the end of these verses here? He has now reconciled in his body body of flesh by his death in order to present you holy and blameless and above reproach before him. If indeed you continue in the faith, stable and steadfast, not shifting from the hope of the gospel that you heard, which has been proclaimed in all creation under heaven, and in which I, Paul, became a minister. He has done this work of reconciliation. And since all things are his, and we are reconciled to him, all things become ours. Through him, by being related to him. I'll end with that. It's 9:41. Next week, Chris will pick up the generosity study. And we'll see you then.